Should you, we, I guess we should have figured out before we start recording. Do you want to start or should I start?
You start. I mean, you start.
Okay. Welcome to the audio intro for the video podcast. Is that what they call them? Video podcasts? Whatever. The video vlogs? No, that vlog is very outdated.
No, I can't keep up.
Okay, whatever they're called, the YouTube show, Roll the Dice with D&D. I am Damien Abraham, and with me is my friend and one of the greatest front people of all time, Danko Jones. Danko, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, what a wonderful intro. Thanks, Damien. I'll take it. Yeah, I'll take it.
Well,
nice to be here, and it's an honor to do this with you.
Well, it's an honor to get to do this show with you. This is something that you and me have been working on off and on during the pandemic.
Kind of working on.
Yeah. It's going to be amazing when people finally see these episodes begin to roll out as, like, you know, I go from having a full head of hair to bald by the end of the duration of these episodes, because it feels like we started recording them forever ago, but they're finally coming out.
Yeah. And I'm happy they are. And I forgot we actually did this, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was doing a computer hard drive, like, look at the biggest files on your computer thing, and all these files came up, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we never did anything with this. And I had so much fun recording this thing that I hit you up, and I'm like, we got to put this out. And luckily, you were amenable to that. And I think, knock on wood, this is the announcement of this being a somewhat ongoing series. Am I correct?
I think so. This is going to be our regular thing. I paused my own podcast for the last 13 months. So I'm not really doing much. Not that I don't want to do a podcast anymore. Every month I say, okay, this is the month I restart my own podcast. But this rolling the dice with D&D, this thing we've got, you and I together, is a kick in the pants for me. So I'm embracing it.
Well, that's what I'm hoping. I love your podcast. So I'm hoping this, you know, slowly but surely in your own time brings you back to doing, you know, your show. But in the interim, I will force you to kind of, well, not force you, but I will drag you along to talk about records each and every week. And I was thinking probably the best place to direct people is, you know, your record collecting Instagram, right?
That's right. Yeah. That would be, out of everything we do as a band, that Next Level Record Collecting on Instagram, at Next Level Record Collecting Instagram, is the closest thing that is connected to this kind of show we've got going.
Absolutely. And so I do a podcast as well, but this is going to be something different. This is going to be just us talking about, well, for me, it's going to be very much on brand, because let's face it, I'm about as deep as a puddle when it comes to this stuff, but for you, it's all over the place. So this is the first one. And I guess follow this podcast. I don't even know. It feels weird saying follow this podcast with a video thing. So go to YouTube, check out Roll the Dice with D&D, and we'll be back next week with episode 2.
Woo. Or should I have said that?
No, it's perfect. We'll end on the woo. All right, we're recording now. So this is the first one of these. This is going to be a demo, right? This is like our demo episode.
I think so, but if it's, you know, if we knock it out of the park, this is for real.
Yeah, so if people are seeing this right now, we fucking nailed this.
Right.
But if not, you know, this is the test run. I guess welcome to... what should we call this thing? Do we have a name even for this?
Well, you pitched to me D&D.
D&D is good. I think Roll the Dice with D&D is a pretty cool idea for the name of the show. But just in case you didn't want to go with that, I didn't want to force it upon you. But I guess we're now kind of agreeing that this is the name of the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought you meant you wanted to do a D&D show, Dungeons & Dragons show, and I was in on that as well.
I know.
All ready for that.
That's why, you know, I love you for a lot of reasons, buddy. But, like, the fact that you were willing to ride with me when I was, like, pitching you on a Dungeons & Dragons podcast, like, I was like, oh, my gosh, you got faith. You got faith in this thing.
Well, I was just wondering who was going to be the Dungeon Master, because I just don't want to be.
Yeah, no, and I think you know, Dungeons and Dragons is one of those things that I like to talk about playing again, but every time I actually sit down and think about the logistics involved, I'm like, there's no way I'm ever going to play this thing.
Same with me.
But this is a show where we are going to kind of get to explore our personal record collections and share with each other some of our discoveries along the way that we've made. And, you know, because you are obviously a master record collector yourself. And
Thank you. And you are as well. I mean, you have an impressive collection.
I definitely have, like, I didn't lose my virginity until I was 20. So I had a lot of time to just fixate on vinyl, you know, when a lot of people were out there exploring their bodies and exploring life, I was in my room exploring 7 inches of pleasure in the form of records.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I remember being, you know, broke and just obsessing over a $5 record that I was going to get on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it better still be there.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, you know.
Oh, there are definitely times where it was like, well, you know, if I just eat pasta with tomato sauce for the whole week, I could completely go down the street and buy this incredibly, at the time, expensive record. But now looking back on it, my gosh, were we getting deals?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so true. I you know, over time, and I guess this show will prove, my taste in vinyl collecting and record buying slowly changed and changed again. And now it's to this thing where I don't even know what I don't know what I'm looking for anymore. I just know when I see it.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. Like, I don't really buy that much online. Right now I should be, because that's, I guess, really the only way to get records.
Yeah.
But I think for me, it's offered an opportunity to kind of like finally stop and breathe for a second and actually go through my records, you know?
Right. Right.
Go on.
Well, I'm doing the same, but I'm getting rid of stuff.
Yeah. I know. I got a record from your collection still that I got to pick up that from the pre-lockdown time I put aside, because, you know,
I should have just given it to you right then and there.
I think I forgot it at your house. I think you
Is
said
that what it was.
Yeah. You're like, take it with you. And I, you know, forgot it. And now I will have to listen to that Len record when this thing's finally over. I was going to say it, you know, I wasn't going to pretend like I was too
cool. Oh, there's no shame. No. I have nothing to hide. I'm proud of my records, proud of what I'm getting rid of and what comes in and out. I don't care.
And Len is the only group, as we've discussed off air, that can link Mal Havoc to Biz Markie.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's like the only, like, I, you know, that's, and that's pretty cool. Like, I would say, two pioneers in their respective genres linked by a pioneer in the pop genre.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
But we're going to be talking each week. I guess we're going to take a record or a series of records, right? And discuss it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I can choose one of the records from, okay. Yes. I've chosen a series of records for this debut show, but I'll focus in on one of the records from the series.
I've got a series two to discuss, and yeah, I think I'm going to focus in on one, but I think there's a lot for us to discuss in these records. And I think the thing about these records is we're going to bring it into all of our interests today. It's going to touch on our mutual love of punk rock. And I'm even going to bring in my less love, but your very much love glam rock into this conversation as well.
Yes. I mean, I am a glam rock, LA glam rock fan. No shame again.
No,
nothing. I love it. And I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah. I like no effects. So believe me, there's no shame in this conversation whatsoever. So, shall we move on to, should we toss a record to decide who goes first?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah, I think so.
I have a 45 close at hand that I can just reach over and grab that will be flippable.
I'm near the books and CDs, so I can flip a book. But
no, I've got this 45 here. This is the band that was George Pettit, myself, Chris O'Toole, who hosts Footnotes with me, and Ian Keough from Attack in Black. This was our group that we had together. Still am sitting on a shit ton of these, so I can spare one for the list. So do you want B-side or A-side?
I'll choose B-side.
Okay. We got A-side.
Okay,
I'm going to go first this time.
All right,
let's start off. I went with, I had a last-minute shift because a lot of the artists that I wanted to discuss today in my research turned out to be problematic, putting it mildly. And so at the last second, I decided, because you're going with a series, that I wanted to go with a series too. And I picked the Montreco punk rock series. Now, you probably have seen these 45s over the years, because this is the sleeve that it looks like.
Right.
Normally, right?
I mean, it's vaguely familiar. I can't say that it jumps out at me.
Okay, well, there's four records that were put out in this series, and the four records are just like the most random assortment of punk records. They did this, and they also did a compilation, but the four punk rock records in this series were a Vile Tones 12-inch, a 12-inch by a Northern Irish punk band called Pretty Boy Floyd and the Gems, and a 12-inch by The Action from Ottawa, which that's the only record that was exclusive. All the rest of these are kind of licensed, and a 12-inch by Venus and the Razorblades. So it's like four records that have absolutely nothing to do with each other, geographically, sonically. Like, and I guess they could all loosely be called punk. So normally when you find these records, it's just that generic sleeve that I showed you. These are ones that I've tracked down, and this took me forever to track down, that have the covers. They did like a limited number with actual covers. And so I think it took me about 15 years, I think, before I had them all, you know, in just various places picking them up. The Vile Tones I've never found with an actual cover. I don't think they ever made one, but I did find one day at Sonic Boom one that someone had made themselves for it. You know,
this, oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's like a fan drawn picture with a little picture of Steve Lucky over here, AKA Nazi Dog.
Right.
Featuring the three, I don't know, like definitive punk songs of the mm-hmm. first wave of Toronto punk.
Right.
On there. And yeah, this for the longest time was the easiest way to find this Vile Tones record, because these, I don't know how many were pressed. I think probably a few, because you would see these popping up. The story of Montreco is this was like a sub label of Montreco Records, same name, that put out all sorts of weird stuff, including, the prog rock band, new wave prog rock band, Mobius. They put out like, you know, a lot of French Canadian sort of, singer songwriter stuff and disco records and things like that. And according to legend, allegedly, it is a mob front, or it was a mob front. It went out of business a long time ago, so I don't think they're putting out anything soon. But I guess these were just like cash-ins on punk rock, like trying to get in on that trend as it was kind of hitting. And they are amazing. Like the records that they picked are, you know, once again, completely unconnected, but they are all fascinating in their own right. Action were an Ottawa punk band. They claim to be the first Canadian punk band ever, and they say they have recordings from 73 that like predate Teenage Head and all this sort of stuff.
Is that out?
Yeah, you can get that. They were interviewed by Steve Perry on Steve Perry's radio show, and it's an incredible interview where the lead singer, I think it was Greg Dick actually who did the interview, is making all sorts of claims, and then the recordings came out, and it's like, I don't know if you'd really call it punk, the stuff they were doing super early on, but this is an incredible record. TV on the Blink being the standout track on this thing. This is the only record that they ever got out at the time. You see flyers for them and show posters, and they did play Toronto back in the day. I think they might have even played the legendary Crash and Burn Club. The Vile Tones, who we discussed, you know, Steve Lecky, infamous band. Do you have any run-ins with him ever?
Yes, I'd say maybe twice.
Okay.
Because JC in our band knows him as well before me. But there was one time he came to our show and he gave me a crystal skull.
What?
Which I have. I don't think I've ever told anyone this. And he goes, he held it in his hand, in his fist, and he just grabbed my hand and he put it in my hand. He goes, I give you my power. And I have that in a special box at home.
That is amazing. That is wild. I've had a one time fucked up, got the reunited Vile Tones to play one of our Halloween shows that we used to do.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And it was like amazing. I was so excited to see them, you know, cause I didn't go to any of the other reunion shows, which I really regret now. And so I was like, you know, getting ready, they get on stage, they all set up, you know, and it was, you know, like kind of like an all-star band of like good players. And they're like, where's Steve? And Steve Leckie had just gone home. He decided he didn't want to play the show and just didn't tell anyone in the band. So they set up all the gear on stage only to find out that he wasn't going to play. But that was the second time that I really met him. He used to come into the video store I worked at. And then one day showed up with a copy of the first 7-inch. And then set me on a mission to find mushrooms, and it was a very weird trip for a straight edge guy to go on. But
wow, but you got that story out of it, though.
Yeah, and I did get the first Vile Tone 7-inch that day.
Like, okay, so he gave it to you
in exchange for magic mushrooms.
Right.
You know.
Oh wow.
And
that's so cool.
Yeah, I didn't know anyone. I was like straight edge at that point. I had no idea how to get mushrooms and like. He's asking like, how do you do these? I'm like, how do you not know? You're like the guy with the Vile Tones.
He asked you how to do them.
Yeah. It was a very surreal moment. Like at first he shows up and he gives me the 7-inch and he's like, okay, what I'm going to do for you, you know, if you can complete what I want, it's going to make this look like garbage. Like, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you just gave me the first 7-inch. She's like, yeah. He's like, you're a mover and shaker. You're a guy who can get shit done. Right. And I'm like, Yeah, I guess so. And he's like, yeah, you're like the guy, you know, because I got this new band. And he starts talking about his new band. So I think he just wants a show, right? So I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, dude, I can help you out totally. He's like, yeah, because you're a guy who can get shit done. And I'm like, I guess so. And he's like, yeah, like you're the type of guy that if I call at like 9 o'clock and say I need some magic mushrooms, you could be like, bam, I got magic mushrooms for you. I'm like, I don't think I could do that. He's like, okay, well, I'll see you at 9. Get the magic mushrooms.
Wow.
And
that's great.
I did. So that was my run with Steve. But the one I want to talk to you about is, do you know this band at all? Venus and the Razorblades?
No, I don't. I do not.
This was a band that Kim Fowley put together. The lead singers, two lead singers, one was 14 and one was 17. They kind of came out at the same time as the Runaways. Like they 76, they were put together. Obviously, Kim Fowley is someone who is been kind of exposed for being a real abusive figure in recent years.
Yeah.
So I have never read anything about anyone in this band involving this band, but to be fair, there could be some darkness in this record as well. Ronnie Lee, the guitar player, she actually wrote Where the Boys Are for the Runaways. Like that actually is their song originally, which became a hit in Japan. Like it was like a gold record for the Runaways at some point. And the drummer on this record is Nicky Beat, who played in the original lineup of LA Guns.
Whoa. That's pretty cool.
He was also in the Germs and he was also in the Weirdos as well.
Right. Wow.
And then also on this record, I think it was Ronnie Lee. Maybe it's Ronnie Lee. Someone on this record, I'm pretty sure it's Ronnie Lee, also wrote Big City for the Dead Boys. Which on the second record. Which I didn't realize that a lot of the songs on that Dead Boys second record weren't written by them. You know, like between the Rock from the Tomb songs and I think they do a Stones cover and this, it's like, wow, that was a record where they were just like, we got nothing. Let's just get
sometimes,
some songs.
Yeah, sometimes that's, you walk into a studio and you want to walk out of there with something.
Yeah, and they did. I like that Dead Boys second record. A lot of people hate it, but I do enjoy that record. And Pretty Boy Floyd and the Gems were on Rip Off Records, which is the other Northern Ireland punk record label. Like Rip Off Records is always going to be second to Good Vibrations.
Right.
Good Vibrations did The Undertones, did Rudy, did like a lot of the biggest records. And I guess Rip Off Records was kind of considered like a bunch of glam dudes that weren't really part of the scene playing it. This record rips, though. I love this album. Not to be confused with the other Pretty Boy Floyd, who I think is...
With the L.A. Pretty Boy Floyd, right?
Exactly. So I knew you'd know that. I think I know them.
Well, I can't remember the guitarist's name now. It escapes me, but from the L.A. Anyways, whatever. But wow.
Yeah, but these were the records I kind of wanted to, you know, just hip you to. Next time you see them, you know, this is normally how they come. If you find one with a sleeve, pick it up, because that is a find.
So there was only four of these in this series, but the label itself had a lot more different kinds of musics.
Yeah.
That they released,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like not a lot of great stuff in my experience. Like, I picked up a couple other records outside of the series, and it's not really been hitting for me in any sort of way. They also put out a punk compilation LP that I think is just all these 12 inches comped.
Right.
Called Permanent Wave.
What's the deal with it being such heavily Canadian?
I think because it was Montreal, right? And it's just like mobbed up, and they were just like the easiest artists to get. Like, the thing I don't know is like, it's almost like they just like ran their finger down like a review section in some sort of like trouser press. And they're just like, okay, let's just reach out to these bands. Or maybe these were just the bands that wrote back and were like, yeah, sure, you can have the license.
Right.
I guess the Action would be the weirdest one to find out, because that's the only one where it's like an exclusive record. Like everything else, they probably just licensed the masters for it. But yeah, these things are, they do show up occasionally, and they're still reasonably priced when you find them at record stores here, but they are becoming more and more collectible because, you know, I think there were probably, you know, 1,000 press maybe, but I love the photos too.
They all have a very similar look, and whoever did the Viletones kept with the aesthetic. The look.
Yeah. That's why I was wondering, is this maybe a prototype for a real cover? That's what I'll like to think, because they also have another version underneath.
Oh, Jesus. That's super cool. Being from Toronto, it's just a cool thing to have. It's, you know,
yeah.
The Viletones one especially.
Yeah. No, I think... a friend of mine also gave me Steve Lecky's old American Express card that I have. It's expired, so don't worry. I'm not spending it on anything.
That's good. And I want to say that Steve has been nothing but kind to our band. So
he's one of the greatest. He's a legend. Like, you know, like I'm not I subsequently have done mushrooms now, and it's awesome. So he was definitely hit me to that too. it's so funny about the Viletones though, because so when a couple years ago I went to DC on a road trip, like we did a Turned Out of Punk live tour, and at the night after we performed, we went to the Discord house and basically, just punished our way in. And Ian, like, we're talking about the Viletones, and he's like, we're in the warehouse, and he's like, you got to come into the main house. I'm going to play you something. And he played me a song that was from the first ever Bad Brain show with HR singing. Cause I don't think they ever played before him though. So this might be the actual legit first Bad Brain show. And, they cover Screaming Fist by
Screaming
the
Fist. I knew that. Did I know that from you? I knew that.
In Henry's book, I think he talks about it too. And like, you know, that annotated, like,
Fanatic.
He talks about it in Fanatic and stuff. And it's, you know, so it's so wild to think. And then I, like, recently talking to Brian Baker for the podcast, he also was like, oh, that's a huge record for us. And it's funny, cause when you hear it, like, obviously the Bad Brains are the most unique band ever. And like the band that revolutionized hardcore and took it to another level, but you can, you know, and that's not to take anything away from this when I say this, but like, you can definitely hear the influence that the Viletones would have had on that sound. Like, obviously they took it to a different place, but it's still like, oh shit, like that makes sense. Like, I can hear that in there.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's like, so those are, that's my first entry to our little record club that we're starting here.
That's great. I love how you start with a Toronto band too, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, and we will eventually get to the 666, and Brother Lynch and the Funky Blue Velvet 45, but
yeah, you mentioned that
we'll give it a little more, you know, we'll get to that point where I can, you know, we got a, there's a lot of stuff to get. There's a lot to unpack in that record. So we'll just leave it with these four.
That's great. That's great. I'm really liking this.
I think it's fun, you know, like,
by
I,
the way,
I yeah. like, I'm having a good time. You know, this is exactly, you and me have this, these conversations on the phone, and now it just feels like bringing our real life conversation into the fake internet world.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess it's my turn.
Yes.
And it's good that you went first, because I think it was great for me to watch you do it, watch you work. So I'm going to do some, I'm going to lay it out very similar to how you just laid it out.
Okay, absolutely.
And so I've chosen a series as well. And these are the Co-Star, the Record Acting Game series.
It's a game?
Well, they call it a game, but there's no game involved other than trying to keep up with the recording of the actor and slipping in your line. So each one of these come with a, of course, the record, but each one of these, this is the Vincent Price one. It comes with a script.
Oh.
Someone tore off the cover of this one, but you've got all your lines here and it tells you who, what character you're playing. And, of course, in the series, they the first version came out in 57, and then they released it again in 77, okay. I believe, 77, yeah. So 20 years later, they re-released all these albums. There's 15 in the series. Now, I have six, and I've said they're hard to come by, but I've said when I – get the whole series, I'm done collecting records. That has just been my quiet thing. I've told it to a couple of people. And then I posted about it recently saying, that's it. Once I get all 15, I'm done. And they were stars back in the 50s. And it was a, it was on Co-Star Records, which was a subsidiary of Roulette Records, which was also apparently run by the mob. And so the mob had the clout to lure all these people to do this series. Some of them were over the hill actors looking for work. And I think the diamonds in the collection are the Vincent Price. There's Pearl Bailey, Don Ameche, if you're a Trading Places fan. A lot of these people are, were huge stars in the 30s and the 40s. So I, it's before my time. So I really don't, unless they have a connection to today, I really don't know who they are. There's a Arlene Dahl. I have the Arlene Dahl album. The Arlene Dahl, and she does scenes from Casablanca. And Arlene Dahl is the mother of Lorenzo Lamas.
Whoa!
And she was married to Fernando Lamas. And so, there's all these little tidbits about these people. The first of the Co-Star series I got a very, very long time ago in a record store on Lakeshore Boulevard in Toronto called Vinyl Museum, Peter Dunn's Vinyl Museum.
One of the two locations, right? They had, or maybe they had three?
They had one on Bloor Street.
On Bloor, like Bloor, yeah. And Bathurst. Yeah.
But the big one was on Lakeshore, and Peter Dunn worked there himself, and he sold me this.
Who's that?
So this is the first Co-Star album I got. It's starring Maxie Rosenbloom, who was a boxer turned actor who is now in a few boxing hall of fames in the States.
I guess we can, and we know why he was doing a mobbed up record.
Yeah. I mean, there's, it's too obvious the connections, yeah, there. But this was my first one, and it really set me, when I found this record, after this trip to the Vinyl Museum on Lakeshore, actually with someone I think people in Toronto know, Matt Galloway,
mm-hmm,
who probably forgets about our trip together, but we both went to the Vinyl Museum together. And so Matt, you know, he came back with – a lot of people in Toronto who listen to Matt on the radio now on CBC don't realize just how next level a music fan Matt is. I mean, he keeps it close to the vest. He'll talk about the current, you know, Grammy-nominated artists. But this – Matt goes so deep. So anyways, Matt walked out of there with, I think, two or three records. And you know, one of them I remember being an early Dinosaur Jr. album. I walked out of there with this album under my arm, the Boom Boom Washington solo album, Lauryn Hilton Jacobs solo album, and a Batman record and some other records I can't remember. But it was those three records are really what set me off on what I still do to this day, which is finding these kitschy next level records. And it was the Maxi Rosenbloom record that set me off. And then since then, I must say and give a shout out to Aaron Keel, because Aaron recently found this for me and sent it to me. And he does the Toronto Record Show in Toronto. And I told Aaron maybe a couple of years ago that I collect these records. So since that time, he's been on the lookout for the Vincent Price one. And so there's other ones. There's Pearl Bailey. There's, like I said, Don Amici. There's Cesar Romero has one. And you basically, you put the record on, and there's a script that you follow from scenes from novels and plays and movies of their day from the 50s, and you act it out. The only problem is sometimes, I guess what I found out in doing these scenes is that I'm an over-actor.
You've done them?
I've done them a couple of times. It's, you know, it's something you just
yeah, you have to.
Just want to collect, and you just want to make sure you have. But to actually go through the script with the actors, I don't know. I think I'm over the hill for that. But the times I've done it, they don't give me enough time to deliver my line before they start saying the next line. There's space.
Yeah.
They say the line, then there's space for you to say your line, and then they say the line. And I realized maybe I'm just an over-actor because I think, not finished the line. I have dramatic pauses, and it just doesn't work.
You just got to pitch it down.
Yeah.
Do like a screwed and chopped version of these CoStar records.
So these are the records that I have. Yeah. So the reason why I think you can find these, they're around, even though they came out in 57, is because of the re-release of the series in 77 by Roulette. So I think a lot of these are from the second
pressing.
Version. Yeah, the second pressing.
Is there a way to tell? Like, is there like a any sort of difference in the? It might be like a copyright thing at the bottom, maybe, or.
Not that I can find, yeah. But I do note here that this record was produced by Hugo and Luigi, and that is all that is mentioned. They don't really give you too much to go with, but there's 15 of them in there, and I don't know. These kinds of records I'm a sucker for.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a few of these kinds of records in my collection, but
do you have there's a big black one, right? Where like you read the script for the interview and they answer the questions for you.
Oh my God. It just sounds like something they would do. But they probably got it from this series. Like Albert Brooks, the comedian, he did a spoof on this series as well. So it made the rounds, but I wish they would reboot it and do it again with contemporary actors as a goof. But you know, I think I'd be the only one to buy it.
I want to do a duet record where you like leave the other person's part blank. So, and then you send the lyrics. So you're like singing and you can like, everyone can do a different version of that record at home.
That's an amazing idea. That is an amazing idea. And then use the font of this.
Use the font. Yeah.
You know, you can kind of bridge together where you got the idea.
Come yell with me.
Amazing.
Yeah, come yell with me. Oh my God.
That would be amazing. It would be Judd should do that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like that would be another, that would be the logical next thing in the Judd kind of world.
Yeah. Well, that's what, you know, that's going to be the first thing to come out of this collaboration that we're doing. We're going to have this new singing record.
I didn't get to show you the other ones in the collection. So here's Virginia Mayo. In scenes from the motion picture, The Girl from Jones Beach. I don't know these movies. And there's June Havoc. And another one that I recently got in the series Oh, I don't have it here. It's still in, oh, it's still on the shelves, but it was, Tallulah Bankhead. Yeah. Her co-star album is fantastic. So she lived a crazy life. Just personally speaking, Tallulah Bankhead lived a crazy life. She apparently smoked 120 cigarettes a day. Whoa. She was addicted to drugs and alcohol. And this is, I think, in the 30s. And I guess she bragged about her sex life back then, and she created a huge hubbub. But I was most impressed with the 120 cigarettes a day that she smoked. And she fostered children. And she was a television movie star, and she put out one of these records as well. I have it. I wish I could show you. Man, I thought I picked it out here. But anyways, Tallulah Bankhead's.
What was she in? Album. Like, I know she, I've seen shit with her in it.
She was just on radio and Broadway and television. Again, a lot of these actors, unless they did something in, you know, the kind of contemporary world that I have no connection with. Arlene Dahl, Lorenzo Lamas's mom, who I have her record, is still alive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I believe June Havoc just died in 2010 at the age of 97. So they're still around. I'm sure you can get the story of CoStar Records out of them.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, I don't know the work they did. And apparently, from my research, they were all kind of over the hill already. Except for, you know, Vincent Price is the diamond of the collection because, you know, people still love Hilarious House of Frightenstein. Mm-hmm. And they know him from Thriller. And, of course, you know, all the horror movies he starred in. And he's such a great character that lives on,
he,
you know.
He kind of strikes me as someone who just would have done anything. Like, will the check clear? Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, Vincent Price was the one I really wanted.
Yeah.
Now that I have him, I want the other one.
Is there an Orson Welles one? Or like,
no, he was too big time for this. True. Yeah. You know? They just had, like, you know, Basil Rathbone and and June Havoc, and I mean, you know, I don't know these people. There's Jimmy Rogers though, who was the singer. He wasn't even an actor, and he was signed to Roulette. So if your bosses tell you to do this acting record, you do the acting.
<Yeah. you know? laughs> What is Cesar Romero? That's a Joker, right? In the 60s Batman?
I believe so. Yeah. Like he was the, him and Pearl Bailey and Vincent Price. Those were the names that, and Don Amici because of Trading Places for Me.
Yeah.
But Don Amici also did other things. I believe he was Sherlock Holmes in some series, but I could be wrong. Or was it someone else? Anyways, you know, you kind of know these people, but it wasn't a, you know, it wasn't an Orson Welles in the series at all. Like someone like a Yul Brynner or no one like that.
He would have been there eventually, Orson Welles, if that series had come out like in the 70s as opposed to just being repressed in the 70s because he wasn't doing fish stick commercials and stuff.
the outtakes are
incredible. Incredible. Yeah. Celebrities at Their Worst might be one of the greatest CDs I've ever heard. Do you ever have that?
I don't have it. I've probably heard a lot of those tracks though that have made the rounds.
Yeah.
Barry White, is that part of that?
I think Barry White was
Casey Kasem.
Casey Kasem one, yeah. There's the one with Jerry Lewis where someone calls his office and he picks up. And like, and the person's like, "Oh, I'm a really good friend of Jerry," and he's like, "Oh, you are really?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, where'd you know him from?" Like pretending like the whole time. And then James Brown's Interrogations on there too. The one,
oh.
"Are you high?" "No, I'm not high." "Yeah, I'm high." It's like, and but there that Orson Welles one, you know, the outtakes from that commercial are incredible.
Oh, they're amazing. I love those. I love the. I mean. The Casey Kasem one really made Negative Land. I mean, if you remember that whole U2 Negative Land debacle. But just based on Casey Kasem outtakes from America's Top 40, I believe.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, those are great. William Shatner as well. There's some great outtakes from William Shatner.
Has anyone ever asked you two about that Negative Land thing now? Like, I wonder if it's ever been brought up to them in, like, modern times.
Yes, they have. And it was one of the guys in Negative Land who pretended to be someone else, and they kind of jumped the edge on a radio interview that I have somewhere. And what Negative Land did recently was put out a lot of files that people could download and create their own mixes, which I did.
Oh, you did?
I have a Negative Land version of the U2 thing that I made myself that maybe I can release. I don't know. I think if Negative Land came after me, that would be hypocritical.
I don't think they would come after you at all. I'd be worried, though, about U2 still.
Yeah, so I don't use any U2 music in my mix. I used interviews of The Edge and Bono, and that's what I used. And also there's something online, and I grabbed it from YouTube, where one of the guys from Negative Land attacks the REM manager for snitching on them. Anyways, there's some kind of crazy stuff. Yeah, you can find it on YouTube. The Negative Land guy accuses him of ruining his career. It's great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn. There's also this band Paranoid Vision that put out a U2 diss record in defense of Negative Land back in the day.
Oh, good.
Like an anarcho band from England.
Oh, great. Yeah. I mean, there's so much about U2 that I know people love, and I just knowing about the Negative Land is just tainted everything about them for me.
Yeah. No, there was like, if you were kind of from like any sort of punk leaning or like outsider music leaning kind of circle, you hated U2 long before they put their record on your iTunes.
Oh, and when that happened, I lost my mind. I did an Instagram post, and people were going, "What's the big deal? It's for free." And it's like, "Well, Negative Land, man."
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes deep. It runs deep.
It does. It definitely does. And I think that's like, you know, that's that college radio in you coming out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, Jesus. Yeah.
That's how you know Matt Galloway, right? He used to, didn't he do, he was like a CIA or CKLN.
He was CHRY.
CHRY, sorry, yeah.
And his show is called Autopsy Turvy.
Oh, man.
The Autopsy Turvy Show. And my show was called The Great Big Backward Show that eventually became the Seminole Load Show.
What a name. I would love to get tapes of these shows. Like, that shit's rare because, like, unless someone was sitting at home running like a tape deck with their radio, there's no archive of that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I have a few shows, but not everything.
I don't think I have a single appearance of myself on Mods and Rockers at all.
Yeah. I mean, I tried taping it, but then it's the tape. I mean, I didn't have any money to keep buying blank tapes, so I couldn't do it. But there is one infamous interview I still have, although the tape is warped now, of Matt Galloway and I interviewing Henry Rollins.
What?
And that is, if it ever was, would be released, would be pretty legendary.
he's been ducking me for years on being interviewed. And like for years and years. So, you know, if you ever need a forum to release that one, hey, Turnout of Punk is lacking a Henry Rollins interview.
Well, see my podcast, I did a Henry Rollins episode.
Yeah, you did one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of cornered him and, you know, to his credit, he ended up being, you know, he put up with me. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I would be the same way if I was in his position. So, Fair enough. I mean, thanks to Henry for that. So, yeah.
When we played MTV the first time and shit kind of hit the fan and people were smashing everything and Steve Lecky was actually there at that show and Henry Rollins was like, oh yeah, like, you know, like we'll hang out after the show, blah, blah, blah. He left as soon as we started. As soon as everything.
Really? Yeah. Oh, man.
He bailed.
that's too bad. I mean, but he was cool enough with me where I can, you know, go, oh, that, it was nice of him to, it was good talking to him. But of course, I knew what angle to approach him with, which is the angle of this show, which is records and yep. record collecting and odd and weird and noise records. Yep. So, you know, that's how to get him, I think.
Well, maybe we got to get him on this show one day in the future because we'll have guests on this thing eventually.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
When we run out of records from our own collection, but I don't think that might take a while.
It'll be a few episodes before that. I already am planning episode 2 and 3 in my head.
I think I have my episode 2 record selected. So, I guess we should say where people can find us otherwise.
Otherwise, okay. Well, I have a podcast, like we mentioned. It's called the Danko Jones Podcast. It's on Spotify and SoundCloud and iTunes. I also have a Regal Beagle podcast about Three's Company, which you've been on, mm-hmm. and you've been on the other one too. Mm-hmm. And that is on only iTunes. And then I'm in a band, and we put out a record called A Rock Supreme. So that's our latest album.
I do a podcast called Turn It A Punk. I'm at Left For Damien on social media. Turn It A Punk is yeah, like all the places Danko mentioned. I sing in a band called Fucked Up, but we're not doing too much. Oh, we got a bunch of records on eBay right now that are going to COVID relief for people in prisons. So check those auctions out. You can find at Fucked Up for more details, and I'll put it on my socials too. And that, I guess that's it for me. Is there anything else you want to add or?
I'm good. This has been a lot of fun. Any chance to talk records with you is fun. And it's a kind of it went down exactly what I thought it was going to go down, mm-hmm. like, which is like a show and tell.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the thing is like this was like, you know, when I pictured, how could this work? And it's like, well, it exactly like this.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I guess see everyone next week on the show.
Can't wait.
All right. we got caught up and started having a podcast off the record again. So, but you were just saying like,
The importance of like appreciating all this stuff. There's a point in time. It was weird because I hadn't talked to Joe for some years. Right.
Yeah.
A while. And then we got back together. You reached out to me or something. And it was like, you called me, I think. Did you reach out to me?
Yeah, I did. I called you.
And it was like, oh, Joe, I hadn't talked to you in a while. It was like this thing, we met up and we were talking. And it was like this whole thing of like almost like tears almost. I mean, I'm just saying that because it was like, but it was this appreciation of like, dude, how do you not have your friends from way back? You can't forget about those people because you start going places and you get lost in a way. And then it's like, you gotta get grounded. It's like, you gotta have that grounding. And that's what it is. It's like, it's very grounded. And I was like, totally touched by that. I'm like, oh yeah, dude, we haven't talked for a while. I was like, holy good, we're friends like thick and thin.
Yeah.
You went off on your own. And so you gotta do your thing. But it's like, nah, dude, I got to come back and be with my real people. And it was like, that's kind of cool. That was like one of those things that, you know, we touched on that at the Vans thing, like how that's real, dude. That's like the real deal stuff. And it is like these true friendships that you have with people, regardless of where they are in life. It's like your station doesn't make you change from who you were when we met you way back when. We've been friends for over, as we were saying, we've been friends for over 30 years, right? That's that's crazy. So, and even after all this, even after I'm like retired from medicine and I'm, you know, working at a comic store or something or whatever I'm doing, it's like, I'm still going to be your friend and, you know, and you're still going to have the invite to come out, you know, hang out, you know, it's like, my wife knows that, my kids know that, it's like, they know how close we are. Everybody knows that, which is kind of a given. And I just appreciate you for you, you know, regardless of being Joe from Rise Against. I mean, that's not even it. Like I said, when these people come up and talk to me and they're like, oh my God, you know this guy? I'm like, yeah, I've known him for 30 years and you have no idea. I could say something and we start laughing. You have no idea what we're talking about. You'll think we're the stupidest people ever. Like, you're a doctor and he's like this like big star. I'm like, yeah, but we're going to say something that is 30 years in the making that you never even understand. And it's like that kind of thing that we can just enjoy, which I appreciate 1,000 times over.
Yeah. There's like nothing, there's nothing like it other than maybe religion, where you can have like this thing that you kind of carry with you for your whole life, you know? And that's like, that winds up being this weirdly, oddly guiding sets of principles, even when you're rejecting it, you know, like Tim Heidecker was on and talked about how he thought Ian MacKaye and the sort of like vow of DIY poverty, anti-manager label stuff was all bullshit. Anti-success stuff was all bullshit, but even he's reacting to it by rejecting it. So it's something that he still carries with him to this day. And it's like, it's something that we all carry with us. And like, when you meet people again, after all these years, like, you know, it's the crux of this podcast is that you can kind of bring people back to the same place. Cause we're all really, you know, coming at the world from a similar, maybe not place, but certainly from a similar understanding of it through our years of schooling through music, at least.
Well, I think it's incredibly rewarding to listen to your guests on your show, and especially like Jeff Tweedy, like that. You could tell you like lit that spark again in him. Like, he was stoked like to talk about the old days. And I loved hearing that. Or like you had, it's her name slipping me, but the Grey's Anatomy actress.
Oh my God. Why am I blanking on this too?
She grew up with like, you know, Harley and
Brooke Smith. Brooke Smith.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That episode was insane to me. But you're kind of reigniting these sparks like in these people's lives, like that it's stuff that they haven't thought about probably in a long time. Not everybody, but some of these people you could tell they're like, I am totally old. Just brain farting, like the Kids in the Hall actor,
Bruce McCullough.
Yes.
Yeah.
God damn it.
You're right. Like, it's funny. Cause like, especially with these people that went on to do, you know, and like, you know, like yourself too, like, but huge things in music or other parts of pop culture, especially people that do it in other parts of pop culture, where they have this inkling in the back of their mind, like, yeah, the shit I was into was kind of cool and it's kind of important, but it's so far removed from their everyday life that, like,
you know what though? I don't, it's not to cut you off, Damien. I think
please.
The reality about all of it, if you think about things that make people somewhat successful, it is having that unique nature, knowing like your freak flag and flying it and having that stand out. And a lot of that's what draws all of us into punk rock, right? Like we're like these outcasts in a way. Like we don't always fit the same, you know, bend of that curve. We're a little off on that. And we see things differently and we want to march by a different drummer. And that's kind of our uniqueness, is what we embrace that, right?
Yeah.
And I think once you embrace that uniqueness, if you can incorporate that into your everyday, it's going to sustain you in a way that's different, and it nourishes you and allows you to go through some adverse things because you can see it from a different angle and you can walk around it or go through it or go above it or you know, bash it. It's just that whole thing of embracing your uniqueness and embracing that kind of weird streak about you, embracing your weirdness, that I think we in punk rock do really easy. And I think it allows us to succeed in ways that other people don't. I, you know, I'm not trying to exclude us, but it's always there, I think. And that's the unique thread, I think, through all of this, is that we all embrace our inner weird, which is cool.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what you're doing. Yeah, no matter what you're doing. I mean, even in, you know, my profession, I still have to have that streak that makes it me, you know, unique to me. You know, I think of my form of medicine as a punk rock form of it because it's so anarchic and it's so, you know, all over the place. And you have to be able to really, you know, dive through this and break through and sometimes think outside of the box to figure out what's going on. And you also have to capture an audience very quickly and engage with them so that they're going to tell you what's going on in the emergency department. So that's kind of using my skills as a front man in a punk rock band to navigate and do medicine in the best way that I can. So I think all of us embrace that. So finding these people who are, you know, scattered around the world in differing professions, but we all have this commonality of our roots in this genre of music, this feeling of a community that we have, I think makes us do so better and strive to do our best.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think to back up your thesis, the guy who invented the Moderna vaccine is a punk rocker, apparently.
See, there you go.
Yeah. So
it is maverick thinkers that are, you know, people that are true, like, you know, thinking outside the box, people that are doing, approaching things differently. And
DIY spirit. It's not like, how are you going to, it's not a matter of like, hey, we can't play shows. Like, how are we going to play show? Let's do it. Let's figure out how to get this show done. You know, that's how it is. You know, it's not like we can't do it. It's like, we're going to do it. We're going to find a way to do it. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. And that's what, like, also like everyone who's carved like success through punk rock, like, not, you know, obviously people that like wind up playing other types of music and stuff and finding success. But I mean, like, any band that's like carved a path to success in punk rock has had to carve their own path. Like, there's no one, you know, like Rise Against, you guys aren't following anyone else's trail, you know, to
get
to where you went, you know. And in the same way, like, whatever someone wants to say about like Fall Out Boy's music, whether they like it or not, like, they did what they did on their own terms and uniquely sounding it. And there was no Fall Out Boy that they were following in the footsteps of. It's like,
totally.
It's like, kind of like, you got to make your own, you got to do it on your own terms, no matter what you're doing coming out of this thing.
Yeah,
Bowievils are taking over. Bowievils take over 2022.
Well, we have talked for a long time on the record and off the record, and I got to say, anytime you guys want to come back on together or separate, you know, the door is always open here.
Absolutely.
Oh yes, you wait till a couple of practices are underway. There you go.
How about we start a podcast and we're going to have Damien on our show?
We should do that. We should do that. I'm ready. I'm ready.
You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first.